You late is thinking we didn't finish Baruch Shammah, right? Is that what you're thinking? No. My mind reading is getting very schwach. Like that, what it used to be.
I think
Yoel
was one of that.
What?
I think Yoel was one of
that. Oh. Second to find a place where what I spoke about last week, and I just want to finish the concept a little bit, is that when you read basically from Parshas Vayeshev until Vayechi, so says the Sfarnoi, when you read from Vayeshev until Vayechi, then we have to read the whole, which is pretty much the story of Yaakov. We have to read it on two levels. Level one, you have to read it as Ein Mikra Moisim Dei Pshuta. We have to understand the stories of Yaakov and Esav. That's not what I'm here for today. That's the Chumash thing. But then what you also have to understand is that from Vayeshev until the end of Bereishis, the story of Yaakov is also the story of the unfolding of Jewish history. That means that everything that that is going to unfold and happen to the Jewish people as history progresses happened to Yaakov on a microcosmic level. And this is extremely important because that's what the story is here for, to be able to understand what it is we're going through. And I explained that the reason for this is that it's extremely important, as Rafaim Elojan explains, it's extremely important that in order for us to have the strength to be able to endure all of the unfolding of history as it happens, we have to have it somewhere in our genomic experience. somewhere in there it has to have happened. And Yaakov, being the prototype of the Jewish people, and that's why his name was Yisrael, endured every single thing that we're going through, whether it's in general or whether it's in detail. He went through it, and being that he went through it, it gives us we already know how to do this. We already know how to go through it. It's a very simple thing. Let me just read you, by the way, this Sfarnoi. Sfarnoi is the beginning of Vayeshev. Very important. I don't think I actually pointed to it last time. Sfarnoi says, Ela told us Yaakov. Says the Sfarnoi, Mi'oz sheyatzim mebeis aviv, from the time that Yaakov left his father's house, Haya in Yanov, it's very important, Hayu in Yanov, his life, the life of Yaakov, was Kemokoros avosenu begolos rishon. From the moment, again, let's focus here, from the moment that Yaakov left his father's house, meaning that as long as he was living in his father's house, basically from the time he was born until the time he had to run away because of Esav. So we know one thing about Yaakov, that Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Oeli. That's what we know about Yaakov. He lived a very simple life, and he sat and he learned Torah. In other words, it was a sort of a blissful situation, if you will. It was a blissful situation. It was a relaxed situation. Even though there was Esav in the background, who we knew always had it in for him, but nevertheless, it was a blissful situation. As Sfarnoi says, and this you'll find, by the way, in Chazal also, it's not, you don't need the Sfarnoi. The Sfarnoi says it out very well. The Sfarnoi says that that was, let's look at that as the period of the Jewish people during from the time they became a people, Yaakov was called Yisrael, until the Chorban Bayis Rishon. So let's understand this. What we have to understand is that from Me'oz, from the time that the Jewish people walked into Eretz Yisrael, all the way until the time of the Chorban Bayis Rishon, talking about 1,000 years. So there was no issues. There were no issues. It was 1,000 years of not just of peace, but of more than peace, of Shechina. There was Hashem amongst us. And it means that if anybody started up with us, they lost. If there was ever any, there was very little illness amongst the Jewish people, there was very little pirud, division amongst the Jewish people, and most important, nobody disturbed us from being what we are. And if you look in history, I mean, there was little episodes which have to do with this one's aver, that one's aver, but basically, Shlomo HaMelech was on top of the world. He built the Beis HaMikdash, he built the Bayis Rishon, and the Shechina was there, and the strength of the Shechina was so strong, that if anybody who even didn't aver would approach the Beis HaMikdash, they would lose. In other words, they died. They used to, you know, it was impossible for a person to do an aver to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This kind of a situation, which is, as I say, microcosmic in Yaakov Avinu's life, was basically the first 1,000 years of Klal Yisrael as a people. And that's what we have to understand. And then, you know, all hell broke loose. Because what happened was, because we got involved in really serious averus, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, we started killing each other and stuff like that. We went down, we spiraled downward. So as we spiraled downward, the Shechina left Klal Yisrael. And this says the Sfarnai, that Me'ashi Yatsa Me'Beis Aviv, this happened to us when Yaakov had to run away from this blissful situation of his father's house, because his mother told him, your brother Esav is going to kill you. Okay, no small thing. So from that point on, Hayin Yonav Kimo Koros Havosena Begolos Rishon, Me'az Shechazar Alaretz Megurei Aviv, and from the time that he came back to his father's house, after all that, or the place of his father's house, Hayin Korosav Kimo Shekar Lonav Vayis Sheni. Then starts the period of the Bayis Sheni, v'Churbanai, and the Churban Bayis Sheni, v'Galusai, and the Golus of Klal Yisrael, Ugulasai, and again the Geula of Klal Yisrael. It's all there in the life of Yaakov. That's all the Sfarnai says, and he doesn't say anymore, so I have to take over. But what happens over here is that it's extremely important to understand that Yaakov Avinu, and this is, I'm just going to go over very quickly because I want to go further with this, Yaakov Avinu left his father's house, that was the Churban Bayis Rishon. When he came back, so then we have Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megurei Aviv. So Rashi says, the famous Rashi, Vayeshev Yaakov lived there, came back to Eretz Yisrael, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Yaakov thought that was it. He could be relaxed again. In other words, he was thrown out of his father's house, or he ran away from his father's house because of Esav. Did a whole circle around Mesopotamia, and what we call today Iraq, until he finally got back to Eretz Yisrael, and okay, he went through a horrible gullus, and this would have been the gullus of the Jewish people, that they're going to go through this horrible gullus. We know that the Bayis Rishon, in the first place of Mikdash, was destroyed, and it was a horrible destruction. Over 1 million Jews were slaughtered. This week, Asara B'Tavis was the time that the Babylonians surrounded, that's this Wednesday, right, in history, that the Babylonians surrounded the city of Jerusalem. Just like now, you'll go to the old city and you'll see the walls of Jerusalem. Right around there, they surrounded. It means that they stood on Rehov Yafo, they stood on Rehov Shlomo HaMelech, they stood on Rehov David HaMelech, they stood around the Ari David. The Babylonians completely surrounded a huge army, the Babylonians, the biggest army in the world at that time. They, a superpower, they surrounded Yerushalayim, and they were able to break through. First of all, they let no supplies in. We celebrated, if that's the right word, Mornet, on the 10th of Tevis. But what happened on the 10th of Tevis, specifically on the 10th of Tevis, is that the wall got broken through. But what happened before the 10th of Tevis was there was huge, huge starvation in the city of Yerushalayim because no supplies could come in. Nothing grows in the old city. Yeah. Except for stones, dust. You know, nothing grows there. There's hardly any water in the old city. The water that's in the old city came from the Gihon, and they ingeniously, Shlomo HaMelech, ingeniously worked out how to pump it up to the Beis HaMikdash to be able to, doesn't rain in the summer in Yerushalayim. People were starving to death, and, you know, babies were trying to nurse from their mothers, and they could get nothing from their mothers, and babies would die in their mothers. So was the Medrash. Babies would die in their mothers' arms because they were just so starving and trying. The frustration was unbelievable. And this was something that never happened to the Jewish people. It was new in the experience of the Jewish people. So that was the Babylonian exile. Okay, so we went through this exile. We went through the Sasara Batavis. We went through Tisha B'Av. We went through everything. 70 years of Golos. And then we came back to Eretz Yisrael. So when we came back to Eretz Yisrael, Ezra brought us back to Eretz Yisrael. After 70 tough years, 70 years of Holocaust, Ezra brought us back to Eretz Yisrael. The Persians seemed to cooperate with Ezra. Ezra gave new hope to the Jewish people. They built a base of Migdash. If you'll go back to the life of Yaakov and read it on that level, Yaakov came back to Eretz Yisrael. Because Yaakov leishev b'shalva, Yaakov thought, okay, good, it's over. Suffering is over. Struggling is over. You can take a deep breath. And here we are back in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that was that for whatever God wanted us to go through that. So we finished. We went through it. Not so lucky. Says the Rashi. This is all from Bereishis Rabba, by the way. Kafatz olav roiv zoi shel Yosef. So suddenly, the anger of Yosef, or the issue of Yosef, let's call it the issue of Yosef, popped on to Yaakov. Yaakov is an old man already. Thought he's finished. All of a sudden, a new episode starts in his life. Lutzara, new problem. Finished with Esav, finished with Lavan, finished with all these things. The Yosef problem. This was a much deeper problem, because till now the problem was somehow external. Now the problem was internal, inside. His kids were fighting. It's like the worst kind of, it's one thing to have a fight with your brother, another thing to have a fight with your kid. It's the deepest type of atzar, rog zoshel Yosef. By the way, just while I'm here, how would you translate this? If you give me a kafatz olav, jumped on him, rog zo, what's it mean?
The shaking anger.
The what anger?
Like shaking
anger. Yeah. You know, in Yiddish there's a word like, why are you breugis? You ever hear that word? Breugis. Brogis. Hmm?
Brogis.
Well, yeah, but it's a Yiddish term. What does it mean in Hebrew?
To be...
Berogis. Berogis, yeah. Yeah. So in Yiddish it's breugis. Yeah, breugis. But in Hebrew it's berogis. So, berogis.
Like turmoil?
Yeah, we use it as upset with, and why you're so.
Are you brogues with me?
Right, why are you brogues with me? So here's the question: what is the dictum here? Kafatz olav came on to Yaakov, thought he's going to sit b'shalva. Shalva means the opposite of brogues, right? Shalva is the opposite of brogues. Peace, tranquility. Shalva is tranquility. Kafatz olav rogzo shel Yosef. Rogzo, his brogues. Whose brogues? Think about what's some different possibilities. Could have said Roga Shel Yosef. Roga Shel Yosef. Who's Rogzo? So it could be the brothers' Rogas. Could be Yosef's Rogas. Could have been Yaakov's Rogas. Could have been Hashem's Rogas. Whose Rogas popped up over here, jumped on him? Rogzo Shel Yosef. So I look, the Parsha Barashi say, that about the Medrash Rabbah, they say Rogzo Shel Yosef means his rogas. Yaakov Avinu became in turmoil. He became upset over what was going on with Yosef. Okay, so now let's define this for a second. What was the Rogzo Shel Yosef? What was it? What we talk about it. What was the issue with Yosef? The issue was that the brothers didn't get along. How do we call this in contemporary terms? Sinas chinam. Sinas chinam. Is any sinas chinam? What does sinas chinam mean? Sinas chinam means let's define the term. Why sinas chinam? Only a Michigana, hates somebody for nothing. No reason to hate somebody for nothing. But it'd be normal. So what's sinas chinam? I hate you for nothing. What does that mean? The whole generation was violating sinas chinam. The whole generation of crazies. I mean, what was sinas chinam? What does it mean, sinas chinam?
I always said it meant that hating without not a real cause. So you think you have a cause, but ultimately there's nothing there.
So let me define that a little bit better. What happens is, in my humble opinion, is that if you hate somebody, there's always a reason why you hate them. Yeah. Always the reason why you hate them. But what happens is that, like a cancer, it grows. And you start hating the person not just for what they did, but in order to, this is the cognitive dissonance that goes on in our mind, in order to be able to justify such a negative thing like hate, hating somebody else. People hate their husbands, their wives, their kids. People, there's a lot of hate out there. So in order to justify it, what we do is we have to make in our minds, the subconscious and our unconscious, we have to make in our minds a whole case against the other person. Right? So all of a sudden you find yourself looking at the guy you hate and you say, look at the way he's wearing his hat. Disgusting. The way he walks, he always talks like that. Everything the person does, right? If you are the object of sinas chinam, you will quickly learn that you can do nothing right. Nothing. So it's got nothing to do any longer with whatever it is that you did that may or may not be true. It may or may not be so, but okay, that's your 5%. What happens to the 95% over here? This is totally exploded way out of proportion. And now you're trying to deal on this level. You're not dealing with reality anymore. Right? You're not dealing with reality. So you're going to go to a therapist, and the therapist goes, to this, and to that. Nothing. Don't you see the way he's rolling his eyes? Right? You're going to see all this kind of a thing. And it's all nothing. So that's called chinam. What the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was because of sinas chinam, not because of the 5% which was real, but because of the 95% which was b'chinam. Yeah, in other words, I just want to stop on this point here for a second because it's an important point. Yeah, it's an important point. There's reality and there's interpretation of reality. So reality means, this is what you said, this is what you did, this is what's going on. Din, if you will. It's like din. Whether we should engage in din or we shouldn't engage in din, we should be dan people lekapschus, dan people lekapschus, that's even in din. Okay, that's one thing. But then what happens is there's interpretation of reality. So that means if I'm sitting here like this, so you can say, Yaakov Haber has a headache. Or you can say, Yaakov Haber's really bored. Or you can say, he's in his thinking position. Who was the one who was, what's his name, the thinker?
Rodin.
Yeah. So, Rodin's pose, you can interpret it so many different ways. If you hate me, I can tell you how you're going to interpret it. if you understand what I'm saying? In other words, that what happens is that the whole interpretation of reality became corrupt in 95% of the people and 95% of the instances, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Because this is something that we can control. We have to control it. A tzaddik, the pshat in a tzaddik, is a person who interprets things correctly. That is, in my opinion, a tzaddik. You go to a tzaddik to get a correct interpretation. Tzaddik, a talmid chacham, somebody who can interpret things as they are and not see more or less into it than what it really is, just see it for what they are. And if you're zochah to see things for what they are, not only you're a tzaddik, you could have a huge siyata d'shmaya, you could see deep inside of people's neshamas. In other words, if a person is careful to only interpret what they see, what's real, and not to blow it way out of proportion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the gift of interpretation. That's the one who gets the gift of interpretation. You're a real interpreter. You can do it. This was, by the way, Yosef's homila. So Yosef had a problem with a problem. The brother saw the problem that he had this dream, he had that dream. What's he trying to do? Then came the interpretations. Amaloch timloch aleinu. Oh, you think you're better than the rest of us, and you think these are all interpretations. They weren't any longer Yosef until it got to the point where they decided he's chayiv misa. It's chayiv misa. Got to kill our brother. No choice. Black or white. You got to kill our brother, right? Was this a correct psak? No. A horrible psak. Until they got to the point that Yosef could be thrown into a pit full of snakes and scorpions, and the brothers can sit down next to the pit and break bread. And he's screaming, help me, I'm dying, I'm going to die over here, help me, screaming with all of his soul, with all of his heart, he's screaming, can't you help me? And they're sitting there and they're eating. So, okay, so they got there, that's why the Asar Aruge Malchus came along, they got there at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, which was all connected to this story, because this was the makor of the Sinas Chinam that we're talking about. So it happened. So when we went from Bayis Rishon, you with me, we went from Bayis Rishon to Bayis Sheni, what took place was We got into the Rogzosh Yosef. We got into the Sinas Chinam mode, and then I explained to you last week. I don't want to go over it again how we started getting out of it, and we got into a time where Yosef accomplished. Not only wasn't killed, but Yosef accomplished, and this now gets us to present day times, if you will. Yosef accomplished basically three things. Three things he accomplished, and so too, we're told by Chazal that before Mashiach ben David, there's a Mashiach ben Yosef. There's a Mashiach ben Yosef, which is not as popular as the Mashiach ben David. We don't have all kinds of songs about him and things like that. We don't sing about him. But there is a Mashiach ben Yosef, and he's going to do the same thing that Yosef did. What were the three things that he did? Number one, he got all of his brothers to stand together as one. Even Binyamin. It wasn't good enough that Binyamin should be somewhere else. Everybody stood back in Achdus again. He and his brothers stood back together. Number two, he got his brothers to do tshuva. You look at the parsha, they all said, you know, look what Hashem did to us because we did this Aveira. So there was a tshuva that Yosef did. And number three, he organized a physical existence for the Jewish people. Because after he got them to stand together, and after he got them to do tshuva, he organized a physical existence in the land of Goshen. Now, Goshen was not Eretz Yisrael. Goshen was not a permanent geula, but it was a rest place for the Jewish people. When he organized Goshen, we had parnasa, we had health, we had neighbors. We were in Goshen. That was an acceptable situation. So that was what Yosef did. Yosef's job, and Mashiach ben Yosef's job, is to organize the Jewish people that we can have, maybe today a homeland we have. You know, it's hard. Who can know in history what's what? You know, I don't know. You know, but... It is kind of cool that here we are at the end of days and we have this Eretz Yisrael full of yeshivas and full of Torah and full of business and full of, you know, it's seats in the United Nations. It is pretty wild, the attention of the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of England, and everybody's just looking at us like, here we are. You know, so this is a Yosef time. We're in Yosef. This is in Yosef mode now. What? This is like a little tribe of a few million people. You know, Sudan has more people than Israel. I mean, what's the Afghanistan probably has more people than Israel. So what's the big attention over here? The answer is this: Kach Gazar Hashem. We're in Yosef mode now. And that's where I left. And I just want to add a few minutes here. It's very interesting. As the parshas go on, we see that Yaakov was brought in front of Paro. This is a great summit meeting. Not in front of Yosef, but in front of Paro. In front of Yosef for sure. Paro. Paro was the superpower of the world. Yaakov was the superpower of the world. Ruchnius. And Paro looks at Yaakov. Now, the Torah says, just look at these psukim, the end of last week's parsha. But Yove Yosef el Yas Yaakov Aviv. That's how old he was. Yosef brought his father Yaakov. Brought him. Miyamidehu lifnei Paro. And he stood, the Zakein, he stood him up in front of Paro. So as Paro's sitting, comes the old, old Yaakov, stands him up in front of him. Here's my dad. Right? Vayivarech Yaakov is Paro. And Yaakov blesses Paro. Rashi says, not that he gave him, you know, you should have atzlacha and bracha. Vayivarech Yisrael Yaakov, Yisheila Shalom. All it means is, he gave him Shalom. So Yaakov said to... Yaakov said to Paro, great meeting when you start to visualize this meeting. Yaakov says to Paro, Shalom Aleichem. Kedera kol anirim lifnei amlochim leprochim, like anybody who would come in front of a king, Yaakov had the derech eretz to say Shalom to the Yaakov. That was the first thing that happened. Yomer Paro Yaakov. Now listen to this, how important this is in history. What does Paro say to Yaakov? Thank you for coming. It's good to see you. You got quite a boy you got there. Yosef, right? There's a lot of things that Paro could say to Yaakov. I've been hearing so much about you. What does he say to him? He says, Kama yamei shai chayecha, how old are you? You're like, so old. I never said anybody so old. Kama yamei shnei chayecha, how old are you? Such a strange first line. Yaakov stands in front of him. Blessed Yaakov says, hello, Shalom Aleichem. How old are you anyway? By Yomer Yaakov El Paro. So Yaakov says to Paro, Yemei Shnei Megurai. If you want to know how long I'm living, It's Shloshim U'mashan, 130 years. That's pretty old. 130 years. Then he gives some commentary. Ma'at. This is short years. V'royim hayu yimei shnei chayai. Rashi explains that there's the amount of time that I've existed and there's the amount of time that I've lived. I've lived a long time. 130 years, I've lived a long time. You want to know how much satisfaction I had during that life? You want to know how many times are yimei shnei chayai? You want to know how long I've actually felt like I've lived? Ma'at v'royim. Very, very little bit of time. Very bad years. Very bad years. Lohisigu, I have not reached, if you think I'm old, I've not reached as yimei shnei chayai avoisai bimei migureihem. I'm not as old as my father was and my grandfather was. I'm a miserable, suffering human being. Okay, great conversation. By Yivarech Yaakov is Paro. Again, Yaakov blesses Paro. By Yetzei Malifnei Paro. And he left Paro. What a meeting, you know? How old are you anyway? Old, 130 years. Living, horrible, horrible life. V'yetzei Malifnei Paro. All we know about this meeting. Comes the Baal HaTurim, and he says, this is a horrible Avera on Yaakov's part. Terrible. Terrible Avera on Yaakov's part. And because of this, he says, Yaakov lost 33 years off his life. We know that he didn't live his 33 years. He lived 33 years less than his Avos. So he lost 33 years off of his life. And the Baal HaTurim, and his genius, says that if you'll count the letters in the words of Yaakov to Paro, where he says his life was so horrible and so bitter, you'll find that there are 33 letters there, and for every letter in the Torah, he lost a year of his life for fetching in front of Paro. Wild. So hey, Brzez Nundik, I counted the letters. There's no 33 letters. There's only something like 21 letters. Where is he talking about? What's the Baal HaTurim talking about? It. He says that a Kibalti has such a Kabbalah. You count the letters, you don't see 33 letters. Later, somebody else told me that somebody else pointed this out. I don't remember who. But if you, the answer is that if you want to get 33, you want to get 33 here, you don't start from where Yaakov is talking. You start where Yaakov was standing in front of Paro, the Amidei Litnei Paro, because the issue wasn't even what he said. The issue was that when he was brought in front of Paro, you see, instead of standing like this, just standing like that. So already. The clock started ticking. The meter was on. From the minute that he stood in front of Paro, and he looked defeated, and he looked anxiety ridden and like a suffering person. Before he even said anything, the meter was running. He was losing his ears. So okay, so that's where he got his own ish for. You know, the simple message, we shouldn't lose the simple message, is like. You know, somebody, even on the Madrega, especially on the Madrega of Yaakov, but on all of our Madregas, has to be able to accept what's going on in life and be strong with it. And if you're strong with it, and never give off the impression that I'm a defeated person. Never feel defeated. Never feel defeated. Feel strength. Get strength, no matter how difficult things are. That's the simple message that you have from here. Look at it from a historical point of view. From a historical point of view, as history unfolds, here we are, 21st century, here we are in the 21st century, and the nations of the world will look at Yaakov, look at the Jewish people, and marvel at the longevity of the Jewish people. You know, you guys went through, you know, first destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, second destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Inquisition, pogroms, Holocaust, running around from this country to that country, getting slaughtered, getting thrown out, you know, and here you are, you have longevity. Very few nations in the world can claim the longevity that the Jewish people have. So Paro, meaning the superpowers of the world, look at the Jewish people, which is Yaakov, and this is how this unfolds, and they say the first question, the most intriguing question that they have to ask this Yaakov is, Kama yimei shnei chayecha? How old are you anyway? And now it becomes the challenge of our response. Is the response of the Jewish people, whoa, did we suffer? That's a natural response. That's a natural response. Finally, you're paying some attention to us. Finally, somebody cares about us. You know, let's talk about the Holocaust. You know, let's talk about, okay, I mean, there's no question. I mean, we need Holocaust memorials, all these things. Very good. But the point of the matter is that as in order for us to fulfill our function in this world, and we're finally, why did we get the longevity that we got? Finally, to get to the point where you open up any paper, you know, I take a look at. It's just like an amazing thing to me. You know, people read the news on the internet, as do I. So that's where I get my news from. But in Google, I don't know if you ever noticed, there's one thing on the Google bar which brings you to all the main papers of the world, you know, all the main news sources of the world. What's going on that hour? You know, so you got the Paris Express and the British this and the Chinese Times and you know all these different things translated to English, and you've got maybe 10 different things that happened that hour. I can't remember a time that somewhere Israel wasn't on there. Amazing thing. I'm not talking about like, you know, when something major happens. Like somehow or another, like Israel is always there amongst the top ten things that happen in the world at any given hour, not every given week, every given hour. It's just like an amazing thing. Try it day after day after day. I just scroll down until I find Israel. That's where it is. So we have obviously Hashem orchestrated a situation where we have the attention of the world. No question about it. We have the attention of the world. If people say so much so, it must be anti-Semitism. Like, what do you think? Just forget about it. Don't look at us so much. You know, what do we have to be on the front page of the New York Times, CNN, all the time? Like, what's the big deal? No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated us to be center stage. Why? Because we have a mission to do. The mission that we have to do as a Jewish people is to teach the world about God, about midos, about peace, about integrity, about honesty. That's a mission of the Jewish people. So in order the only way, if you're going to put me in a crowd of 2,000 people and say, go ahead, teach them about Yiddishkeit, the only way to do it is by giving me the mic. The only way to do it is by letting me go on stage. I can't do it from down there. I can only do it if I'm on stage. So Hashem takes the Jewish people and puts them on stage. Here we are on stage. Take a look, CNN, New York Times, we're on stage all the time. Now, and everybody's looking at us. So what do we do? Now everybody's looking at us. We've got the mic, standing ovation, everybody's looking, you know. Wow, you know, bad, bad years. Bad, bad time. We suffered so much. Unacceptable. Unacceptable response. And this is the response, the historical response that we're up to at this moment. The historical response that we're up to at this moment is to respond with a we've been through a lot, but we're here for a reason. We have a mission, we're upbeat, and we've got to teach the world about Torah. We've got to teach the world about God. That's the mission of the Jewish people of that time. Yaakov Avinu in this, I don't know, it was 1 minute or 20 minute meeting that he had with Paro, this great summit meeting, apparently Chazal tell us could have, it's not what he said, it's what he could have said. What he could have said to Paro could have changed everything. It could have changed everything in that moment, and he didn't. And here we are with the unfolding of history. Okay, I want to go further, but we'll stop here because I have an appointment with the doctor.
Yaakov, how
you doing?
How are you?